Can we upload our minds to a computer and live forever? That's the topic today on Mind Matters News.
Welcome to Mind Matters News, where artificial and natural intelligence meet head on. Here's your host, Robert J. Marks.
Greetings. There are some who say immortality is available if we can upload our minds to a computer. This, though, presupposes our minds are computable and can be duplicated by a computer. Our guest today to talk about this topic is Dr. Selmer Bringsjord from Insular Polytechnic Institute. He has appointments in three different departments there, and he's also the director of the Rensselaer AI and Reasoning Lab. That's the RAIR lab, R-A-I-R. Am I saying that right, Summer?
Yes.
RAIR?
Yep.
Okay. And as I mentioned before, he has really been informative to me in terms of his publications and works in the limitations and the capabilities of AI. Dr. Bringsjord, welcome. Thank you again for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's an honor again.
David Gelertner said, I doubt if there is any kind of human behavior computers can't fake. Do you have a response to that quote? Do you think computers can fake just about any human behavior?
If the time parameters and a few other background contextual pieces are fixed favorably for the machine, I would agree. And I suppose my first book, What Robots Can and Can't Be, can be viewed as a book-length defense of the proposition that David advanced.
Excellent. By the way, we'll give a link to Dr. Bringsjord, his book, on the podcast notes. There's a difference between faking something and actually duplicating it. Are there things humans do that can't be duplicated by a computer?
Yeah, I think, apropos of some of our earlier interaction, things in the area of creativity, anything in creativity or creative behavior that leverages consciousness, self-consciousness, since I don't think consciousness of the subjective variety can be possessed by any computing machine, that would be impossible to duplicate. But I suppose a machine over a short amount of time could generate sentences, say, for an opera in the libretto and maybe the music accompanying it, which when performed just knocks people over because it's so incredible. So the faking there would be accomplished and be measured by the reaction of the audience. It would, going back to your question, it would be faking it. So it's not duplication.
Well, one of the things that I see in terms of measuring creativity of the arts is the subjectivity of the assessment. It seems that different people are just going to have different views, and it's not something itself which can be measurable, except maybe in a fuzzy sense. And wouldn't that be problematic?
It is. I think it's intensely problematic and has repeatedly surfaced in the domain of painting in connection specifically with the AI artist Aaron. If a machine is doing painting and it's at all fuzzy, and maybe it's praiseworthy because it is in terms of its assessment, because it's modern art or extremely abstract and conceptual, you get a lot right out of the starting blocks toward many people counting it as creative. That's not going to happen in sending the manuscript of 400 pages off to the literary agent in Manhattan after two paragraphs. I don't care how many agents you send it to from this AI. The result is going to be the same condemnation, and probably it's going to be tossed aside and shredded.
Agreed. You wrote a paper called Cognition is Not Computation, and I wanted to talk about that with your permission. Could you first of all define cognition, and then we'll talk about why it's not computable?
Yeah. Cognition, at least in large part, I define in keeping with how the relevant scientists have characterized it and studied it. And that generally would be cognitive science and maybe even more narrowly cognitive psychology. So fixing your beliefs on the basis of evidence, reasoning, decision-making on the basis of evidence, or perhaps not on the basis of evidence, but semi-systematically. Emotional states driven by the environment, hoping that something will happen, fearing that something will happen. All these phenomena are part of cognition. I think sometimes it helps to insist we're talking about higher level cognition here. These are the kind of things that are solely the province of human persons. Animals cannot lay claim to doing any of these things, at least to any appreciable degree. A mouse may be able to navigate a maze, and so it's, quote, making decisions. But I'm talking about decisions that imply a rationale that can be articulated linguistically, as a matter of fact. Proving things, discovering things, all these mental verbs constitute, for me, what cognition is. I don't think more than a hair's width of these things have even been simulated in computational cognitive science and in AI. And the question is, which group does one fall into? I remember asking James Moore, the Dartmouth professor who's written quite a bit, at least a while back, on AI, you know, Jim, you really are a true believer in this stuff, but can you tell me how much time you're willing to give these AI people? I mean, if we give them another 1,000 years and we still don't have cognition as I've characterized it, captured computationally with the relevant artifacts and outputs produced, are you going to be skeptical now? And, you know, he was, as an academic, I suppose, predictably clever and evasive. But bottom line is, we don't have this cognition captured. So you can either say it'll eventually happen as a true believer, or you can start taking seriously the possibility that there's something deeper going on. There might be some mathematical gap that we just don't get. There might be some kind of qualitative gap in the case of consciousness, because a lot of what I enumerated requires consciousness. You can't hope deeply that something's going to happen without being a conscious creature. So that's, of course, where I stand. I think the math is, people don't want to confront it, but it's very stark. I think we do things that are beyond what Turing machines are capable of doing, and we're also conscious, and we exploit our consciousness to do things every day that we're healthy and neurobiologically normal. We do all kinds of things that exploit the fact that we're conscious.
Some of this posturing for things happening in the future is pretty old stuff. I actually saw a video of Claude Shannon, I believe it was around 1960, who said, I believe in a few years that artificial intelligence will actually be able to duplicate the mind in the sense of the robots that we see in science fiction films. So even Shannon back then was posturing about something happening in the future. And in a way, it's kind of it's scrutiny avoidance. You always say something is going to happen in the future, like Ray Kurzweil says, that the singularity is going to be here in 2049. Well, goodness, 2049, Kurzweil will probably have passed. I'll probably have passed. And he's just going to be some blip, very dim image in the rearview mirror that nobody's going to care about. Boy, it gets a lot of attention now. So I think that this delayed scrutiny is something that has been happening for a heck of a long time. You know, in your paper, you claim that consciousness is a special case of cognition. That's the first time I've heard that sort of claim. Could you elaborate and unwrap that a little bit?
Sure. Let me just say first, I couldn't agree with you more about the delayed scrutiny. And the antidote to that, by the way, is taking a bet. But nobody wants to take the bets. So, you know, if I'd been around when Herb Simon, so we're talking, you know, 50s, and he said, well, in a few years, we're going to work it out. Or Marvin Minsky, you know, it's a short, a few summers or maybe even one summer. Well, don't worry, we'll bring you back this AI. What I don't get about this is, really, well, here's $5,000. Here's 50. Here's 100. Here's my entire 403B that says right now, right here, you can take it, and we'll deal with my descendants. We'll sort this out. Let's work out the contracts. I'm willing to make a bet. Let's make you define the test. You take the money if it happens, or your descendants. Otherwise, my descendants get the money from your estate, or you, and, you know, I've said this, no one's willing to take the bet. So that's the only antidote I know to delayed scrutiny. That's for sure.
Yeah, there's an old story about the farmer who was that was selling his tomatoes to this trader, and the trader bought him for $3 a pound, and he went to market and he sold him for $2 a pound, and he was losing money, of course. And when he took to his accountant, the accountant, who wasn't too smart, said, "Well, I have the solution. You need a bigger truck." All of these delayed scrutiny things kind of remind me of that. It's kind of an algorithm of the gaps that, you know, someday we're going to have an algorithm that does this sort of thing. Yet it's been promised since 1960. What is that? 60 years ago, and you know, nothing has really happened, and nothing has passed, as I see, the Lovelace test, as you proposed about 15 years ago. So consciousness being a special case of cognition.
Well, right. I certainly will agree that is not in any way universally affirmed, and some people steer clear of consciousness and try to prevent consciousness from entering the scientific discussion, whether it's neuroscience or even sometimes things that are more formal, like treatments of decision theory, whether it's normatively correct, that is whether the agents are good at it or whether they're making bad decisions. No, let's come up with an account of decision making that doesn't take the consciousness associated with desire seriously, right? So we don't have to worry about what desire really is and the consciousness associated with that. You know, let's keep it separate. Look at the formalisms. I'm not denying people do that. Some people do. But unfortunately, when we look at the list of the mental verbs, sometimes philosophers, I think, call them attitudes or propositional attitudes. When we look at these verbs that are clearly part of cognition, because they're in the textbooks, they're in the cognitive psychology textbooks or the cognition textbooks. If we're just honest with each other, we'll see you can't instantiate these things in an agent, at least of the human variety, unless that human has feelings, unless that human is such that there's something like to be the human, unless the human feels pain, unless the human feels pleasure, all the things that are wrapped up with consciousness or that perhaps constitute being conscious are really there. So we just artificially separated. So really that would be my way of defending it. Let's just write down the activities that we say are part of being a cognitive agent as opposed to just an agent, because in AI, we certainly in the textbook say that an agent just computes a function from percepts of the environment to actions. So even something as simple as a program that computes the square root is technically an agent in AI. But if we say a cognitive agent, we can't suppress consciousness rising up before our faces, and we have to deal with it. But again, some people can try to dodge it and suppress it.
So if we have these things, cognition and consciousness, which are attributes of humans, your claim in your paper is that they are non-algorithmic. That is, you can't write a computer program to simulate them. They are not computable. What is your argument that cognition is not computable?
Well, first, to be careful, some of them are not computable. Clearly, playing checkers is a computable process, provably so by definition. If we want a simpler case applicable to even young children, then tic-tac-toe, a very young child can learn an infallible algorithm for tic-tac-toe. And when they make those decisions, when they do that reasoning, that thinking, and even the perceiving of the board or the symbols, if it's written out on paper, I'm not saying they're doing something which is not computable. And notice we have machines that can do those things. And even skeptics like me would have conceded immediately, maybe even centuries ago, maybe millennia ago. I figure Aristotle would have said, "Oh, that's an interesting game, you know, checkers." But I'm pretty sure that is, and he would have not been able to attach a detailed mathematical sense to the term, but said, "Oh, that's mechanical, it's calculative." But I'm talking about things that distinguish Homo sapiens sapiens as a species, things that distinguish the human person.
So what would be some examples of cognition which were not computable?
Well,
clearly chess and checkers are computable.
Right. Well, number at the top of the list, although it can come across as elitist. The top of the list is discovery and confirmation, conjecture, discovery, and confirmation in the formal sciences, or to use what probably is good enough, mathematics. That doing mathematics where you're making discoveries and conjecturing and then making discoveries and confirming them is untouchable. And if we just look at any, so I'm working a lot currently because I have a book, Eternally Undone, but getting quite close now, fortunately, on Gödel's great theorems. And look, I mean, if you just look at one little piece of his career where he proves that the continuum hypothesis, basically there's no number, there's no set of a size between the natural numbers and the reals. Okay, is the continuum hypothesis got to be one or the other? If you find an infinite set in there, it's either got to be equivalent to the naturals, equivalent to the reals. This is astounding. This is positively astounding work. So when we talk about AI doing all this stuff, it doesn't really do anything in mathematics. I mean, how does an AI generate, by the way, a new paradigm, a new branch of math has expanded, right? So we don't think we've got even all the branches of mathematics before us. So that would be at the top of the list. The great thing about that one is that we can inspect the output produced by humans who are playing in this space. So it's not like they just give us vague reports about doing these amazing things. They write the results down. So we can look at the results and then we can say, now, can a machine generate something like this? And the answer is, flat out, with a ring of iron, no, we're nowhere. And this would be my number one. Number two, I think, would be creativity. And I'm reluctant to go away from literature because of ignorance, but so it's harsh to the visual artists and the painters, but things in the literarily creative realm. As much as he was a maniac, Wagner, I mean, how does one human being create the storyline, the music, the libretto, which is essentially poetry, and weave it all together and produce that out of whole cloth? I mean, this is crazy. So number two would be that. And because those are elitist, I guess I have to round it off by saying, let's just think about what it's like to love. I mean, what is love, and what's it like for one person to genuinely love another person and be loved by that person? Now, we can't mathematize that. We've got no account of what it is. In fact, the leading formal account of human emotions, the so-called OCC account, which I like very much, has come up totally empty on any kind of formal account of love. And yet, you know, we love people and we want to be loved and we know what we're talking about and we know what the sensation is associated with real love or like. Not, you know, I'm not talking about mere pleasure. I'm talking about love. So everyone who's a human being on the face of the planet can just see there's a major problem here. From love comes arguably the other two things. Why do people insist on locking themselves in a room in Princeton and working on the continuum hypothesis? Because they probably love their interaction even with the formal space that they're involved with.
Did Gödel prove that while he was at the Princeton Institute?
Yes. He proved one half of it, the total independence of the continuum hypothesis from set theory, from what we assume to be the basis of all classical mathematics, was accomplished in two pieces, Gödel being the first piece, and then Cohen, who, as I understand it, actually took a road trip to Princeton. The god of the land, the calculus, told me a story about this. That Cohen came to Gödel and said, oh, I approve the other half. I'd like to meet with you. And Gödel said, well, you know, today's not the day when I meet with people. Come back. And I guess he found some place to stay for a couple of days. And he came back and he handed him the other half, which, by the way, introduced a technique that only a few have heard about called forcing, which is another example in the arsenal I'm talking about to shoot down any notion that AI is amazing. This forcing technique that Cohen came up with is in and of itself ridiculous. And anyway, Turing certified it, said, came back with it, said, it's correct, thank you very much. And they didn't share any other words. But yes, Google did that, I believe, in 30, maybe 30, I forget the date of the first part. It took about 25 years for anyone to do the, for Cohen to do the other side. So, you know, we really don't know what the status of this continuum hypothesis is. I once remember John McCarthy in an interaction I had with him as one of the founders of AI, trying to endlessly argue with me saying why it was true. And it was unforgettable, but it was entirely intuitive. And there is no classical proof that's possible on the basis of what we take mathematics to be. We know this is just impossible.
Yeah. If a listener is a mathematician or a nerd in general, the continuum hypothesis is just an incredible piece of work. So, Dr. Bringsroyd, thank you very much. I think the bottom line of our podcast today is don't upload yourself. Don't pay anybody to upload you while you're on your deathbed, because they're not going to get the non-algorithmic you. They're only going to get the algorithmic you, and that upload is going to be very, very incomplete.
Absolutely.
So, Dr. Bringsroyd, thank you very much for your time. So for next time, until Mind Matters airs again, be of good cheer.
This has been Mind Matters News with your host, Robert J. Marks. Explore more at mindmatters.ai. That's mindmatters.ai. Mind Matters News is directed and edited by Austin Egbert. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers. Mind Matters News is produced and copyrighted by the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence at Discovery Institute.